Welcome back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com. Here's Percy Dyer.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Percival's Place. Today we have an exciting guest on for you. Today he's going to be talking about education. Dr. Jonathan, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, good morning. This is John Jefferson. Thanks for having me on your show.
Ah, no problem, man. I appreciate you coming on. I know. We're going to be announcing that you're going to have your own Talk Zone, show coming on here, and you're going to be talking specifically about bullying and that kind of thing. So, welcome to your first time on the air, and we welcome you, and congrats on getting the show, and that's going to be a very exciting topic to talk about. So I congratulate you and welcome on to the show.
Oh, thank you. And my show will be called Educate with Dr. Jefferson, and it should start in January.
That's fantastic. All right, so let's talk. I know you have a book coming out, correct, or is it already out?
It came out this past summer. It's called Mugamore, Succeeding Without Labels: Lessons for Educators.
Oh, very good. All right, so let's talk about the book. What inspired you to write this book?
Well, I've been in education for over 20 years, and I often relate what I see in education with my own personal experiences, having been a student, as we all have, and having been a parent. And I notice a huge difference in how my educational experience was as compared to my son's education experience. And I believe my son is innately smarter than I am, but I believe the quickness in which we label kids and always try to find a reason behind their behaviors has caused them to have struggled through education, whereas I was given the opportunity, going to school in the 70s and early 80s, of being able to make the mistakes that kids make without necessarily being labeled for it. So I wrote a book where you're following these two children through education in two different generations, and you see the mistakes that one child makes where he's allowed to grow and overcome those mistakes and become who he's going to become, whereas the other child, when you jump 20 years in the future in a new millennium, the other child is labeled every time he blinks and ends up struggling through education. So I just thought it would be I thought the book was necessary to show parents of school-aged children and educators alike that, hey, we need to let children grow and not be so quick to try to find a diagnosis as to why they're behaving the way they are.
And medication.
And medicating them, absolutely.
I'm really big on that. I really can't stand that. The first thing that, somebody wants to do is prescribe medicine. All right, so, wow, that is a mouthful. All right, very good. So let's let everybody be aware of where they can purchase your book.
Okay, if they go to my website, it's available everywhere, but if they go to my website, they can link to what their preference is, whether it's a Amazon or whether it's a ebook or what have you. And my website is authorjonathanjefferson.com.
Okay. Do you have any outside classes or anything of that nature? Are you teaching, outside of the classroom? Do you have any other organizational contacts that you are part of?
Well, right now I'm a school district administrator in Long Island, and that is my full-time profession outside of promoting the book and writing. And in the future and in the past, I have taught at the college level, but right now I'm a K-12 school district administrator.
Okay, where are you administrating at?
Uniondale School District in Long Island.
Okay. So, needless to say, you have your hands full.
Absolutely.
Okay, very good. Very good. My compliments to you on undertaking such a task, because I'm from Freeport, so I totally understand it. And, I also grew up in the 70s and the 80s and, that kind of thing. So I understand what you're going through, and, I compliment you on your profession. All right. So what is it? Why do you think the kids today, this new paradigm that we're in, why do you think we're being labeled? They're being labeled so quickly. And how did that come about? I mean, what was the transitional period? Why are we labeling our children today versus that of, just being able to go through the system years ago?
Well, that's a fantastic question. And I believe it started in around 1983 or the mid-80s when President Ronald Reagan's commission came out with a report called A Nation at Risk. And when this report came out, it showed that even though the United States was one of the best educational institutions in the world, we were starting to fall behind. We were starting to slip. And one of the things that was recommended by this commission was that we start to not only increase the rigor in education, but start to do more and more assessments. And this has created an environment where we are now testing children constantly, and it's now creating pressures on teachers and administrators to come up with reasons as to why the child is maybe not performing as well as they should. And I think that has led us to try to come up with, for lack of a better word, excuses. Well, this child is not performing as well as he should because he's got ADHD, or this child is not performing as well because they're OCD, or this child is, you know, learning disabled, and on and on and on. So it takes the onus off of the educator when the results are not there by simply labeling children. And I think that's become rampant, actually, and to the point now where even parents say, well, maybe my child's not performing well because they need to be diagnosed. You know, so it's now we have teachers and parents who are trying to look for a label to place on their children. But I do believe it all started with this commission's report saying that we're falling behind, and this drive to, let's now assess them at every level and on everything that they're doing and try to come up with a reason. And those assessments now paint poorly on teachers and schools if they're not, you know, performing well. So that's my opinion as to where it started.
Sure, sure. Oh, my. Okay. So, you know, let's say for argument's sake, I have a child now going into school. How do I avoid those pitfalls? What do I do as a parent?
Well, no one knows the child better than the parent. You know, the school only has a child for really a brief moment in time, but the child is with the parent 24/7. So I believe that by knowing your child, you, when you go in to speak with a teacher, and parents absolutely should be in contact with their children's teachers. Don't simply send them to school and say, okay, the school will handle it. You know, I'll just check the report card. You should be meeting with the teachers. You should be calling the teachers. You should be going to parent-teacher conferences to make sure that that child that you're sending to school, that child that you know, is the child that they are seeing in school. And you can also ask your child a few questions to find out where they, you know, to find out where they are in their schooling. For example, if you ask your child, are they feeling comfortable with whatever subject matter they may be doing? If they say no, then, you know, it might be that the subject is too challenging for them and or they need extra support. And another question you should ask your child is, do they know what it's going to take to master the material? And if they say no, then that's another area where you need to, you know, question the teacher, hey, why isn't my child understanding what they need to do to complete this subject matter? So there's a couple of questions you can ask your child that you then bring to the teacher to make sure that your child is being handled correctly, and make sure it's the same child. Make sure they're not going to school and presenting a different face according to the teacher.
That's fantastic. Okay. That sounds like a blueprint for success. So I'd like for you to, you know, sum that up again, repeat that, because I want people to understand that that's what you do instead of the alternative. So please repeat that one more time.
Okay. And I'll try to be a little clearer. There's the way we're educating now, we're educating toward the test. And what you want to do when you speak to your child is you want to see if they're being educated toward mastery. And there are actually the three questions you need to ask your child, because there's three elements that we know are required for a child to reach mastery. The first element is they should be entering the subject matter at a place where they're comfortable. So, for example, when you ask your child the question, are they comfortable with that math that they're doing, you know, and they say no, that's a red flag. If they say yes, then that's they're meeting criteria number one. They're entering the subject where they're comfortable. Number two, you want to know that they get immediate feedback if they struggle. So are they turning in their homework and not getting feedback until a week later? Are they completing an exam and not finding out whether they got the answer right a week or 2 weeks later? Or are they getting immediate feedback? And lastly, there should be a known level of mastery. In other words, what do I need to do in order to move on to the next topic? And that's why I say, does the child know when they're going to move on to the next topic, when they're going to master that level? Let's say, for example, if they're doing math, when are they going to master fractions so that they can go on to decimals. And when you ask your child those three questions, you now know what to go into the school and ask the teacher about. And then you know that your child is being taught to mastery. Otherwise, they're simply being taught to pass a test, and they're not being taught true mastery. And that is where we start to fail. That's when we start to try to find out labels and come up with excuses why they're not performing. So the true education is to master the material, to know it for life.
Absolutely brilliant. There is a distinct difference between the British system and the American system. The American system is geared towards test taking. The British system, however, won't pass you until you master the subject. And that is the absolute difference, even at the collegiate level. And I thank you so much for clarifying that, because that's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
There's a complete difference. If you go and just for instance, you know, because my mother was a nurse for 38 years. If you actually watch a nurse from England versus a nurse from America, you're going to see a huge difference. They're so thorough that it's ridiculous and it's absolutely scary. So that is exactly what I'm talking about. And that is absolutely brilliant. I can't thank you enough for clarifying that. So, okay, so let's talk about this new phenomenon that we got out here, which is not a new one. Let's talk about bullying for a moment, because we still have some time.
Okay.
So what in the world, what are we going to do? Because bullying's been around forever. But this whole idea of, you know, the internet use and children now committing suicide because of it. Let's talk about that. How do we help? How do we prevent? Where do we start?
Well, in my opinion, first and foremost, you need to start at home. You need to build your child's self-efficacy at home. You know, let them know the strengths that are within them, so that if anyone were to say the opposite, they would be able to or confident enough to challenge that. If we don't build their self-efficacy at home, we don't build their understanding that they're valuable and they're strong and they bring a lot to the table at home, then it's going to be very easy for peers or media or any other avenue to tell them differently and have them believing that. And I think that's what that low self-esteem and that believing that, you know, I'm less than is what tends to bring kids toward the edge. And as far as the physical aspect, the children should know right away that no one should in any way, shape, or form be laying a hand on you, and that there are avenues where you can go to make it clear that this is unacceptable without having to feel less than for having done that. So we really need to start at home and build their strength and their reserves at home.
Okay, very good. You know, I had a young lady on, and she was talking about, you know, the use of the internet, you know, and you know, the good things and the bad things. And of course, the bad thing being, you know, having access to social media, maybe for some too early. What is your take on that? You know, letting the kids have access to Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of stuff, and you know,
we can't deny technology. We are in a visual, virtual, and digital world, and that's the world these children are born into. I had someone tell me the other day that they're 1.5-year-old already knows how to scroll the pictures on her cell phone. You know, so this is the world that they're born into, and we can't deny them access. What we do need to do is monitor and guide them and help them to identify the red flags and identify the falsehoods that are rampant. And to do that, it needs to be very visible. I would not, you know, get a child who's too young. You know, I can't give you an exact age, but my thing is if they're not school age, or if they're, you know, 6, 7 years old or younger, they should not have a smartphone where they can access the entire world at their fingertips, because you can't monitor them, you know, 24/7. But at home, you can monitor them. You can make sure that their computer is in the family room where everyone can see it, as opposed to squirreled away in the back of their bedroom or a small laptop that they can hide underneath their, you know, their covers. You know, so you want to be able to monitor what it is they're doing, but you also need to act as their guide as they delve deeper into the internet. But to deny it, I think, is also a mistake.
Okay, very good. All right, well, stand by. We're going to take a quick break, and ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with Percival's Place.
And now, back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com with Percy Dyer.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Percival's Place. Doctor, we left off at the child that was being bullied. How about the child that's actually doing the bullying? What do we do about that child?
I think oftentimes we have a misconception that a child who is bullying is doing so because they're lacking self-esteem. And that wasn't my personal experience. I know when I was in third grade, and I cover this in my book, Muggamore, when I was in third grade, the first time around at third grade, because I repeated third grade, I had students who were bullying me mercilessly. And they were bullying me because I was the new face. I was the new kid in the school, as opposed to bullying me because they were lacking self-esteem. In fact, they were among the best athletes. They were academically high performers. You know, they were certainly not individuals who are lacking self-esteem. It's just that I was the new face, and this was their way of showing that they were the alpha males, you know, and I was not. And
right.
And when I repeated third grade, I began to do the same thing. I became the bully, you know, and I did it more so to protect myself. I said, well, now that I'm with children more my age, so that I don't become the target again, let me do the bullying. So in my case, it was in somewhat a case of self-esteem, because I was doing it to protect myself because I felt, you know, threatened. But the other gentlemen, the other kids that were bullying me were not in any way lacking in self-esteem. So we need to, with children, not be too quick to make assumptions that they're bullying because of X. You know, there are so many reasons, and I'm not a psychologist, so I don't want to speak out of my realm. But for sure, there are many reasons behind bullying, and much of it might come from home. So we need to delve deeper into why a child might be bullying. Maybe they're being beaten at home. We just don't know. There's too many avenues that we need to explore before we make assumptions about a bully. There's no one answer that fits every circumstance.
Yeah, I would agree with you. You know, and sometimes, you know, I don't know anymore what bullying is, what is clearly defined as bullying. You know, this that whole issue with the football players, the professional football players, you know, they were up and down as to, you know, am I bullying, am I motivating, you know, am I bullying, you know, what is, you know, it can seem very confusing.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't really know, you know, it has that issue even been resolved at this moment? I think it's still in the judicial area right now. I'm a little confused. You know, some people, I don't think they actually know that they're actually bullying somebody, and you know, anymore. So I'm really confused a little bit about some people, you know, and the circumstances. So I definitely agree with you. I don't really know what to take of it anymore.
I think we need to just build character, build citizenship. I think if we focus on those things, then people would be more able to say, hey, if I do X, it's not something that, you know, we learned in civics class, or we learned in how to be a good citizen, that, you know, maybe using the N-word to my black friend and thinking that, you know, it's a buddy thing might be offensive, you know, and I think that's
exactly
what's going on in the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, I think some of them are so far out there that they really don't understand that, you know. And I'm glad that you said that. You know, it's like, yeah, that's actually can be taken as somebody bullying you. So, you know, it's very interesting topic. Well, you know, gosh. All right, so once again, before I forget, tell everybody the name of your book and where they can buy it.
Okay, it's titled Muggamore. Mug as in a cup and amore, but it's one word, Muggamore. Succeeding Without Labels, Lessons for Educators. And the best way to find the book is through my website, authorjonathanjefferson.com.
Okay. All right. So you're an administrator from K through 12, you said, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what are some of the best ways that, you know, these kids today can get into college You know, because that's a big one. You know, the getting into college, test taking, that kind of thing versus that of, you know, just trying to make ends meet. You know, so let's talk about that a little bit. You know, what's a good formula for getting into, you know, the university level?
Well, students need to do a lot of reading. A lot of students who struggle getting into colleges, they struggle because they're unable to write well. They're unable to, you know, articulate their opinions well. And a lot of this comes from the fact that students are doing a lot less reading in general than we did in the past, because so much media is so available and they get a lot of information quickly, you know, in the palm of their hands. They're not as inclined to pick up a good book and, you know, flip the pages, or even if you pick up a Kindle and start reading a book, they're less likely to do that. And what we're seeing is that is a huge deterioration in their ability to write. It's a huge deterioration in their ability to articulate their positions. And this is going to show. It's going to show on SATs. It's going to show on ACTs. It's going to show on their college essays. And this is going to limit the choices they have as far as going to colleges. So my biggest advice to students, whether you're reading you know, the New York Times, or whether you're reading, you know, Times Magazine, or whatever the case might be, you know, you should be reading daily, and you should be reading at a mature level. And that's why I mentioned, you know, newspapers like the New York Times, or like the you know, Newsday or Journal. You just need to do more reading, and you should be reading at your age level. So any librarian could tell you that at your age level, you should be reading, you know, Catcher in the Rye, or you should be reading, you know, something that more advanced, whatever the case might be, to increase their vocabulary, to increase their knowledge of how word structures go together. And that's going to help them getting into college. And it's going to help them with all aspects of their learning, even in math and science and what have you. You need to be able to, you know, decipher words, you know. So that's my personal advice, is just do a lot more reading.
Right, you know, and the reason that I said just making ends meet is because, you know, it's so expensive today to go out and buy a newspaper. Newspaper's not 25, 50 cents anymore, you know, it's like $1.50 today.
Yeah.
You know, so how are these kids are going to, you know, do you think these kids are going to spend $1.50 to read the paper? The New York Times is even worse. So, you know, how do we get them to read stylistic papers like that? How do we do that?
Well, these resources are available free. I mean, they can go to most libraries, and they'll have every periodical there every day. You know, they'll have the newspapers there. A lot of schools have newspapers delivered every day, including the New York Times, and that's something they can acquire of their school to do if it's not doing that. And, you know, so materials to read are freely available in school libraries and public libraries, and they're within distance of all of us to make that, you know, walk, or to, you know, make that extra effort to get there. And also, some of the papers are available free online. They might not make the entire paper available free, but you may still be able to read several articles.
Okay. So let's say the parent wants to go the extra mile. What's available to him or her to have their child get that extra stuff? What is out there?
Well, I would recommend getting them an e-reader, because that is their technology. These are virtual digital learners, and they like to have something, you know, technological in their hands. So a good, inexpensive, a lot less expensive than buying a new Xbox or, you know, these new systems that come out every holiday season. But now that we're in the holiday season, this is a perfect time. If your child doesn't have one, get your child an e-reader. And e-readers are, the books will cost you that same novel that would cost you $16 to $30, you know, when it's newly released, will cost you $3.99 or less on an e-reader. So you can, and also they can carry hundreds of books on an e-reader, you know, and it would still weigh the same pound and a half as opposed to buying all of these books. So for a parent, inexpensive gift, excellent gift is an e-reader for the holidays, and you can download several books at very low cost, much less than you'll pay for buying each of these new video games, and, you know, get them motivated that way.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, when they have something like that, you can actually sit them down and make them read that before they get onto those video games, which I know they'll be lost in for the rest of the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, so Doc, one more time, and then we're going to sign off. One more time where they can buy that book.
At authorjonathanjefferson.com.
Okay, and you'll be doing what on Talk Zone now, and what would be your topics?
I'll be doing education commentary. My topic will be anything in education, from labeling to bullying to getting into college, some of the things that we started to touch on, to Common Core, state standards, to testing. And the name of the show will be Educate with Dr. Jefferson, and we look to initiate airing in January.
All right. And do you know the time and the day?
Tentatively, 4 p.m. Eastern time on Fridays.
Perfect. All right, Doc. Well, congratulations. Good luck.
Thank you
for coming on the show. It was a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. And, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this episode of Personal Place. Next week, we'll be having some more exciting guests for you. Thank you for joining us.